Tanice Marie is an Assyrian and Canadian singer-songwriter who has emerged from the mystical forests of Argenta, BC. With her talent for vulnerable and disarming lyrics, she builds her songs with vision and care, singing tenderly of love's vagaries without lapsing into maudlin or cliché. A multi-instrumentalist accompanying soulful vocals with acoustic guitar and oud, Tanice crafts a unique blend of Western and Eastern folk music, reflective of her own mixed European and Assyrian heritage. Welcome, Tanice.
Thank you, Shayna.
Yeah, I'm so grateful to finally get a chunk of time just to chat with you and to hear from your own mouth your reflections and your journeys into your work as a musician and the many beautiful projects that I have heard you create over this last little while. And so I would actually like to just start by asking how your journey as a musician, how your journey as a vocalist began for you. Where and how did you start this path as a musician?
Sure. Well, I do consider myself a singer-songwriter, and I'm a singer first. Singing was my first love. I started playing acoustic guitar as a teenager, mostly, I'll admit, because I didn't want to rely on anybody else, and I wanted to be self-sufficient. And I grew up as an only child in Argenta, BC, which is a remote, unincorporated community at the north end of Kootenay Lake. And so while I was no stranger to community, I spent a lot of time alone. And I do think that in some ways it was that physical and mental space that allowed me to access creativity. I think I was inspired to fill the silence.
Wow. So then can you give me a little bit more of that filling of the silence? Can you tell us more about what it was like to grow up? Was it mostly on your own, or just give us more about that and how that's influenced your music and your creative process?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, growing up in a way where I spent a lot of time in nature, I think that a lot of themes of nature have emerged in my creative work, you know, even just in the lyrical content. And I also think that, you know, spending a lot of time alone and sort of spending a lot of time, I guess, interacting with my imagination, so to speak, you know, definitely influenced the way I create music. And basically songwriting has always been like a form of therapy to me. So I've used songwriting and performing as a means of processing emotions, processing experiences, you know, processing heartbreak, processing trauma, grief. And it helps me understand myself better.
And I understand that you have performed quite a bit in spaces where you live in Argenta, in Nelson and Caslow. And I'm always curious, because I know my own journey with this question, but what is it like for you to sing such personal lyrics that come from your heart and soul, and have your soul bared as you do for people that you then have to rub shoulders with the very next day in the grocery store, who are in your life in many different capacities? What's it like to bear your soul within a small community or within a small region? Would you share?
Yeah, that's an interesting question for sure. I think, to be honest with you, I think that that's one piece I don't overthink, because I think in the process of performing something, I dissociate from the personal connection. So in writing it, it's extremely personal. But even in the songwriting, it kind of helps me like to emerge from that, like very personal experience. And then when I'm performing it, it's almost just a reenactment of something that's already happened. So it feels like, it actually feels like through performance, I can separate myself from it, if that makes sense.
Fascinating. Yeah, fascinating. And so your journey as a songwriter and as a performer, I understand that you are digging into some very personal realities for yourself in the form of digging into your culture and your heritage and where your roots are based. Would you give us a window into that? Because I know this is a pretty big deal, pretty big thing. And I don't want to speak about it. I want to hear it from you. So tell us about this latest work.
Sure. So in the last year, a large artistic focus of mine has been to reconnect with my Assyrian heritage. So I do have mixed heritage. My grandmother was Assyrian. And because my mother was adopted, we were not connected with our Assyrian family. So the people that, you know, have been still connected to Assyrian language, Assyrian culture. I grew up without any of that. And it's only been in the last year and a half that, well, I joined an Assyrian women choir, for one. That's sort of where it all began. And then through the Assyrian Arts Institute, which is based in California, I was connected with a number of different Assyrian creatives, which have these connections have led to several different projects and to some different exploration for myself personally and artistically. But basically, in the last year specifically, a large amount of my focus has gone into this because I was fortunate to receive a research and creation grant from the Canada Council for the Arts. And they actually facilitated my trip to the Assyrian homeland in northern Iraq. So that was, it was an incredibly profound experience. And, you know, there's a big difference between reading about what it means to be Assyrian on a Wikipedia page and then going to the Assyrian homeland, going to Atra and you know, experiencing that firsthand. So I think it was somewhat impossible for me to not integrate those experiences into my art. And when I came back to Canada, I wrote a number of songs, but I wrote three that felt really complete. They were in English, and they also incorporated some Assyrian lyrics, which has been a huge learning experience and super exciting. And I performed these songs at a couple concerts that I did in the Kootenays, one in Nelson and one in Kaslo, which were called Argenta to Atra. So Atra is the Assyrian word for land or country, and it's what Assyrians commonly use to describe their homeland. So basically, these concerts were exploring the themes of similarities and differences between these two places that I grew up in, or that I grew up in and that I revisited, and sort of comparing different experiences of home.
Could you give us a window of some of the insights or reflections that you draw out in that performance piece, Argenta to Atra?
Some of the reflections?
Yeah, comparing your experience of what it's like to be in both lands and what it means. Can you give us a little window into what you reveal in that piece?
Sure. Well, I mean, something that I noticed when I went to Atra was that I did feel like an outsider in the sense that I am still learning the language and learning a lot of the cultural norms. However, something that made me feel very at home was the rural environment that I experienced in Assyrian villages, which a lot of Assyrians who grew up in the global diaspora, you know, most of these people have grown up in cities. So that was something that I had in common with people who had, you know, had the experience of growing up in Assyrian villages. In that way, I was more acquainted with village life than people who were, you know, more acquainted with the language and more more acquainted with the cultural practices.
And what was it like? Do you think you could access for me, like, at the level of your heart and your soul, what was it like to physically be on the homeland, to have your feet touching the ground, breathing the air, being among the people who are of your ancestral heritage? How can you give us a window into the profundity you spoke about earlier?
Yeah, well, I think that it's so interesting because, you know, for example, my dad's family is British, English and Scottish, and I went to England and Scotland, and, you know, in just making small talk with locals there, I said, oh, my dad's family is from here. And people think, oh, that's nice, but they don't really, care. But when you go to, Northern Iraq, you go to Assyrian villages and you say, I'm Assyrian, it's a completely different experience. And I think this is for a lot of different reasons. I think that Assyrians are very umtanaya. This is a way in the language of saying patriotic. Assyrians are very patriotic, especially because they don't have a country. I think that this forces them. When you don't have a country, what you have is language and your land. So for me personally, I feel like I could relate to the connection to the land because growing up where I grew up, I've always had such deep respect for land. For, you know, as I like to say about Argenta, it's the land that raised me. You know, it's not the land that is in my blood. I'm not indigenous to that land, but it very much raised me in my lifetime. You know, so I think that I've always wanted to understand what's in my blood and all the different things that are in my blood, you know, as someone who is mixed. The experience of being mixed is interesting because you don't really get to be anything. You're everything and you don't really get to be anything. So I think that, you know, for me, it was very powerful to be there in Atra. I really just wanted to let this experience wash over me. I didn't want to have any expectations. And yet I was really surprised by how comfortable I felt while I was there. And, you know, I think I can't overlook the fact that basically when I tell people I'm going to Iraq, the response is it's very mixed. You know, so it's not generally thought of as the most safe place to go. So I definitely, you know, encountered a lot of that. And to be honest with you, I didn't tell a lot of people other than my parents that I was going on this trip. I think for a lot of reasons, and, you know, one of them being that I knew a lot of people would express questions of safety, and ask me why I was going. And honestly, I couldn't really say why I was going. I just knew I had to. Like, I know that sounds funny, but I just knew I had to. And it was only after the trip that I realized, you know, I think, you know, I'm sure you can relate to this. Like, just being an artist, I think that you want to understand. Like, you're curious and you just, you'd rather uncover things even if they're scary and difficult than, like, than sort of turn the other way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I totally get that. And so what's it like for you, Tanis, when you are diving into connection to homeland and ancestry, and then you encounter reservation from people when you tell them that you are going back to this land? How does that sit in you, holding, you know, the desire to honor where you've come from and then the reactions of others about the land that you come from?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I just had to go and experience for it for myself, you know, because even before I really took a deep dive into reconnecting with my Assyrian part of myself, I occasionally it would come up, because my whole life people have asked me about my ethnicity. And of course, it's not a simple story. It's, okay, well, there's this and there's that. And, you know, there are different pieces here. But I remember, you know, telling someone that my grandmother was from Iraq, because, you know, nobody really knows who Assyrians are. So you kind of just have to dumb it down for people. So I said my grandmother was born in Mosul. And I remember this person kind of reacted like, ugh, like, I remember that, you know, and that is very much because there is so much stigma attached to being from the Middle East. And, you know, for various reasons, you know, for different, like, you know, the West has a lot of prejudice, but also the West, you know, in the media, it just has like a certain idea about what happens in the Middle East. And usually it's only war, and it doesn't show, you know, the beauty of culture and the beauty of people and the fact that people live in these places and experience very rich, full lives. So I think, you know, it's a lot of those things. And I think probably like the stigma that we're talking about probably has a lot to do with why I didn't, you know, connect with being Assyrian or being Middle Eastern earlier in my life.
And so I want to bring all of these reflections back to your music and to music making and songwriting. Can you speak to what it's been like? Because I noticed you giggle a little bit with, I think, something that looked like delight when you were talking about weaving Assyrian language into the songs that you created after your trip. What is it like for you, Tanis, to sing in this language? What is it like to learn and study and have it coming out of your own body and soul and mouth?
It's interesting because the first project I did in the Assyrian language was after I had auditioned for the Assyrian Women Choir. And the Assyrian Arts Institute, who presents this choir, asked me if I could do a spotlight on project to introduce me to their community, since I'm just this random girl from the middle of nowhere in the woods in Canada. So basically, I was given a few options for songs to choose, and I ended up choosing an Assyrian folk song called Aghalare, and it is, it's a very sad song, actually. It describes scenes of Sefo, which was the Assyrian genocide in World War I. So the Assyrian genocide happened at the same time as the Armenian and Greek genocide by the Ottoman Empire. The Armenian genocide being like the more widely known about, but actually all these groups were targeted at this time. And so this song, Sefo means sword in Arabic and Assyrian. And this song, Aghalare, basically speaks pretty explicitly like about genocide. It's really beautifully done in the Assyrian poetry. But for whatever reason, this is just the song that sonically I felt the most drawn to. And I decided to do a version of it where I played oud and sang. And this was the first time I had sang in Assyrian. And basically, I thought, well, you know, I've sung in other languages, so how hard can it be? And I received a lot of help, a lot of coaching, because there are a lot of consonants that aren't even found in English. You know, there's lots of kh and g and things that were not familiar to my to my mouth. I mean, to be honest with you, I had to have my friend teach me to roll my R's. like, you know, it's funny now to think about where I was 1 or 2 years ago. But yeah, I mean, it was very, for lack of a better word, it was very foreign to me. It was very unfamiliar and uncomfortable to first speak and sing in the language. And I sometimes got discouraged, but I just sort of persevered through it. And that has always been my way of learning, is really through the music. So yeah, by the time I finished this project for this song, it was very well received. And that was very encouraging. And then I continued to sing with the choir, which was primarily Christmas repertoire. So so that was really fun. And just a side note, I love Christmas music. I always have. but yeah, and so then as part of my Canada Council project, I was taking some Zoom lessons, some Zoom Assyrian language lessons with a teacher in Chicago. And I have learned, you know, basically to read and write at a very basic level, which requires learning a new alphabet. And it's a whole thing. But it's so fun. And you know, when I get things right, I feel like a little child and I'm very excited. And it almost feels like I'm like cracking the code sometimes when I make little like discoveries or correlations. So yeah, it's been, I guess when it comes to writing in the language though, I try to be very patient with myself. And that's why I didn't tell myself, okay, you're going to write an entire song in Assyrian. I'm like, how can we just integrate elements of this? So that I can, you know, express myself fully in English, which is my first language. And really the only language I'm proficient in. but then, you know, how can we also, you know, honor the Assyrian language? Because there's so much focus on language revival, specifically with the Assyrian language. And I will say that it's also a really challenging language to learn because, for example, there's no Google Translate. There's no Duolingo for Assyrian. Somebody told me there are 136 dialects of Assyrian. And so, you know, sometimes like every different village can have a slightly different dialect. And so it's definitely challenging and it definitely requires a lot of patience. But for the three songs that I performed for Argenta to Atra that were inspired by my trip, one of them was entirely in English, but just had like some references to places I had visited and, you know, like a reference to an Assyrian singer, Asher Betsargas, who I saw perform in Duhok, in Nuhadra, which is the Assyrian word. And then the other two songs were one I had written in English and I had my songwriting mentor of my Canada Council project, who's an Assyrian Canadian musician named Stella Rezgo. She's in the Greater Toronto area. I had her actually translate the English into Assyrian so that the song it's half in English and half in Assyrian. And I kind of told her, I was like, you know, it doesn't have to be exact, but I was like, you know, if we can preserve these different qualities. And she did a beautiful job. Like it's very poetic in Assyrian too. So I thought that was kind of a cool outcome. And then the third song I wrote the verses in English and had some help, but basically was able to write the choruses in Assyrian.
So Tanis, do you believe that this, or do you feel or sense that this deep dive into your roots and your heritage, do you feel like that this is going to trickle or be present in your work as a singer-songwriter moving forward? Or do you feel that this is having its place and then other things will take and move you? Or is this something you're going to want to keep layering in and deepening in your music work?
I mean, I do feel like it's just the beginning of, you know, of a journey, which I think will be a long one. I really have come to identify with my Assyrian identity, which is not exclusive, or, you know, it doesn't erase any of my other identities, if that makes sense. You know, I believe that like multiple things can exist at once. So like I am Assyrian as I am European, as I am Canadian, you know? And I think that, you know, I said this to someone, it was Assyrian music that first stirred my Assyrian soul. So for me, music has always been the access point to reconnecting with being Assyrian. So, you know, and at first with, you know, with joining this choir. So I think that the more that I listen to Assyrian music and the more that I connect with different Assyrian musicians, like I just think that it's part of me now, and like sonically it's part of me. And it's hard to, you know, it's always hard to predict art. I think that it's hard to predict art. And it's something I noticed while I was doing this Canada Council project is I put so much pressure on myself when I was writing the songs, because I said to myself, like, well, this is an Assyrian songwriting project, so these songs need to sound Assyrian. And then the more that I studied Assyrian music, I realized there are so many different kinds of Assyrian music. You know, like there are Assyrian church hymns. There is Assyrian popular music where, you know, it's quite upbeat and it's played at weddings and it's for dancing, you know. So basically, I guess it depends what you think Assyrian music is. Which is interesting because that's where I started the project, being like, I want to understand what Assyrian music is. And I'm at the end of my project now kind of thinking, I don't necessarily know more about what Assyrian music is, except that, you know, like, I guess I have more questions than I have answers. And my questions are like, so, you know, are they the instruments that make it Assyrian? Is it the language that makes it Assyrian? Is it the use of the language in the music that makes it Assyrian? You know, or is it just the fact that the musician is Assyrian? Is that enough? So I think that it depends, like people are going to have different opinions about that, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like it's a sign of a very rich journey to actually end up with deeper and more refined questions, and not just a block, chalk block full of answers. Do you know what I mean? And so I respect that a lot. I feel like you've given us windows, but I want to ask you now the million-dollar question that I ask everybody who has sat with me for these podcasts, and it's this. Dear Tanise, the question is, how has your artistic practice shaped, shattered, or simply shifted your sense of yourself, your heritage, or the community you live in?
Well, that's interesting because I almost would think of it as the opposite.
Say more.
Well, okay. Can you repeat the question?
Totally. It's my favorite question. Tanise Marie, how has your artistic practice shaped or shattered or simply shifted your sense of yourself, your heritage, or the community you live in? And you can choose just one of them, whatever hits the most, if you like.
I guess it's just interesting because I always think about my environment, my community, my heritage, my surroundings as informing my artistic practice and not the other way around. So like your question is giving me so much to think about that I don't even know how to, I don't even know how to process it. Yeah.
That's just fine. Then we're going to have to do a part two where we spend half an hour diving into your answer to that question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tanisa,
sorry.
You know what? I appreciate the honesty, and I actually like. I think you're the first person that I've had reveal that they actually see that question as in reverse, and I really could spend another half hour diving into that sense that you have. For those folks who are listening who want to follow your journey as a singer-songwriter or your journey diving into heritage and your roots and culture, how can we stay connected to you, Tanisa?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram, follow me on Facebook. You can contact me through my website, tanisamariemusic.com. Yeah.
Perfect. I have a feeling that there's going to be some souls who are drawn to the journey that you're on and are going to be reaching out to you. And thank you so much for giving me a little bit of your time and giving us a window into your world and your journey. And so many blessings on you as you carry forward. And we'll do a part two one day to get the rest of your answer.
Thanks, Shana.
Thank you, Tanisa. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Vibrant Basin podcast. I'm your host, Shana Jones. Vibrant Basin is produced by the West Kootenai Regional Arts Council. Thank you to our sound technician and editor, Carlo Alcos, and our producer, Kaylee Linz, with production support from Margaret Tessman and Natasha Smith. Thank you to the Government of Canada and United Way British Columbia for their support of this project. You can find all our episodes on your favorite podcast platform or the West Kootenai Regional Arts Council website. We'll be releasing a new episode for you every 2 weeks. Stay tuned and stay vibrant.